Pod. 22 Pod. In the city that sounds nice. Yeah, how's it going? You playing at the weekend?
Yeah. Yeah, we're down there in Warrington at the neighbourhood big weekender, which was really good. It was a really nice hot day. It was cool. And then we had a gig in Darwin, a little festival in the city centre there, which was a really cool little festival as well. So, aye, it was a good weekend.
Nice one, yeah.
Still sort of recovering from it a little bit, maybe.
It's a bit longer recovery time these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair play. Whereabouts are you, in Dundee?
No, I mean, I'm in Glasgow. I've lived here for almost 10 years now. Before that, I was down in London, so.
Ah, fair play. Yeah, I guess, like, just get out of the way kind of thing. Obviously, what happened, I live in Manchester, but I wasn't at the gig. Just what happened, obviously, you've got over it as a band. Like, what went on from your kind of perspective?
The video speaks for itself, really, on that one. I don't know how much I could add to that. One thing I will say, though, for the record, is that I was totally up for doing the London show the next day. It wasn't me that cancelled the London show. It would take more than a couple of fly digs for me to peel out for the fans. So, But all good. Gigs have been done.
Yeah.
Bridge, I suppose.
One of the tweets like described you as, you know, like brothers. I guess that's what goes on with families, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I'm an only child.
Yeah, same here, to be fair, yeah. All right then, mate. Just taking it back a bit. Did have Kyle on a few years ago, but just to fill in some of the blanks, like he was saying about how he used to like enter talent contests and all that. But at one point, you said you lot got trades at some point or something? Did you all start working?
Yeah. When we all left school, we all sort of got different trades and stuff. And then it was like, we'd done like one proper gig with like our own material. Like we were a cover band before, and that was like we entered the talent show at school. That's how we started the cover band. And then we all went and sort of went our separate ways, got trades and stuff. And then we got back together to do our sort of like original material. I think we had like sort of one good gig and we all quit our jobs. And then started focusing on the band. I was a joiner's labourer and was a joiner's apprentice for a little while. Pete was joiner as well, I think. I can't remember, but
fair enough. Is that pretty useful at any point?
A long time ago. Like 17 or something was like the last time that it was sort of done a proper day shift.
Yeah. And yeah, like the Pete Doherty involvement, we've read like a few different things. Something like one story was that you were busking to him outside. Another one was like that you got in the venue. What actually happened?
Well, we're waiting outside with a CD, our EP. We had an EP out at the time on our manager's local label that was called Two Thumbs. And so we were waiting outside with that to give it to Pete. And I think we always had a guitar kicking about, like someone was carrying a guitar or just so I imagine there probably was a guitar there, but we weren't like busking for money. We were probably just having a jam outside waiting. But I gave Pete the CD and he took us on the tour bus. It was the first time I'd been on a tour bus and I was like, whoa, this is well cool. And then he listened to the CD like while I was sitting in the back lounge with him, and I was like, it's probably one of the most nervous things I've ever had in my life. It was like obviously a huge fan at the time. And also like just when people like that you respect their music, listening to your music, but then he was into it. So he was like, aye, you could play the night. And I was, no way. So went took me up the stairs in Fat Sam's and up to the promoter's office and was like, these guys are playing, like sorting out the passes. And the promoter was like, nah, man, like there's too many. There was already like five bands on the bill or something. And I was kind of like, fuck, well, this is the end of it, that like kind of thing. But he pulled the old, these guys are playing and I'm no playing trick. And I was like, holy shit, this guy's serious. Like, and eventually, so we got, he said, well, you can go on for 20 minutes, like as soon as the doors open. So literally as soon as the doors opened, we fired up, there was nobody there. And like, but we'd put out on MySpace and all that at the time. So like people knew from Dundee and they were all like running into catches and that. It was epic, like it's a good night.
And yeah, that's quality, yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was like, still can't really believe it, to be honest. Like, yeah, I was lucky. And but then he followed up as well. I mean, we got after that, the next time we played with him was in the Rhythm Factory, which was like, again, like CBGBs or something, I thought at that time, you know what I mean? Like, it was like I'd heard about it, but I'd never been at that. And to go there the first time and support Baby Shambles was amazing. And then it turned out that that was a test up to see if we were allowed to do the UK tour. So, because they had their sort of their agents and all that there. And then we got the UK tour, which was even more amazing. Eh? That was our first ever tour.
So, yeah. That's it. Yeah. Do we like, we just kind of like bang up for taking opportunities kind of thing, even though you were a bit nervous maybe in some moments?
Yeah. I mean, I say nervous, but we're quite cocky, like, when we were younger, but, like, that actual moment on the tour bus, I was sort of quaking it, like, but...
Yeah, was it just you as well? I suppose if you're by yourself, it's a bit intense.
But it was cool. I mean, it was cool. Having the band made us feel welcome and that, like, but... Surreal experience, definitely, like...
Yeah.
It was cool. And, yeah, we've done loads of tours with Shambles, Libertines and all that off the back of that. They really sort of helped us out over the years and that. And it's been cool because we were, like, I was kind of saying, like, I'd, like, started playing the guitar because of Oasis, but I started, like, writing songs because of the Libertines kind of thing or something. I don't know, it was that kind of vibe. Like, it was, like, sort of proper sort of kick up the arse, like, again, like, sort of, it was really inspirational to us. So it was, like, really surreal to sort of be playing with them and all that.
Well, I can imagine it's the same for me. Like, we're similar age, I think, and he definitely inspired me to pick up a guitar. Definitely, if it made you feel like you could do it, just write a song.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't sort of the one that seemed very accessible. So I just like they were also just, like speaking to people online and stuff. It kind of broke that sort of rock star crowd barrier thing, kind of thing. It all seemed very cool. Which I sort of gave the impression that it's all right to go up and give them a CD and ask if they can get a gig, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you had that, you had like a big following of people from Dundee, didn't you, that used to follow you around kind of thing?
Yeah, we were quite lucky. Straight off the bat, we had like sort of quite a decent following in Dundee that sort of grew quite rapidly because we never stuck to just doing like gigs in like the sort of trendy venues in the town centre. Like it was our manager at the time's idea. He said like we'll do a world tour of Dundee and like put it in the paper that you're doing a world tour of Dundee. And we went to like all the pubs in like the sort of housing schemes that like bands never go to and stuff and done all that. And that really helped. He was quite innovative in coming up with stuff like sort of like to get us in local papers and all that.
Okay.
And I just grew from there pretty rapidly. Yeah, pretty lucky.
Yeah. And then in terms of songwriting, obviously, with it's just like mainly you and Kyle, like, did you just have that kind of connection from early on type thing?
Yeah. We fitted quite well, I thought, like, sort of quite contrasting styles almost, but together it kind of came, the view kind of thing, like he was really sort of melodic and I was more sort of thrashy on the sort of punk side of things and he liked it. And it just kind of, that was kind of the view sound. Oh well. Peter's been writing songs recently, the last couple of albums, Pete's been writing some songs, but the first few was on me and Kyle.
All right, cool. And just didn't ask Kyle about the story behind Wasted Little DJs. It's obviously quite a self-explanatory, I suppose, in the lyrics, but what's the story behind that?
The Wasted Little DJs is Carleen and Charlene. Like, Charlene's my fiance.
Oh, right, okay.
Carleen's married to Rennie, keyboard player, and they were our mates at the time that was just doing like just sort of playing indie disco stuff and that, and yeah. So wrote a song about them, and yeah. And we were stuck on the chorus for ages and ages and ages. And then Kyle, so I remember he came up for me like stupid early in the morning one time. I was like, which is unusual for us at that time. And he was like, I've got it, like knocking on the door. And he'd like changed the chorus to Double Dutch. And I was like, that was kind of when it became what it is, which is quite bizarre. It's like a sort of pretty unique bit.
No, it's a nice song, yeah.
Still one of my favourites to play, like.
Mm. Yeah, it's great. And yeah, would you write songs anywhere with Kyle if you both had a guitar? Like, would you come up with ideas wherever you were type of thing?
Yeah. Quite often we would come up with an initial idea separately and bring it into the practice room and sort of all work on it together. Like the whole band, you know what I mean? Mm. Their input, so to say. For example, at the end of St. Jean's, it really speeds up quite a lot and goes into that sort of mad reprise bit at the end. That was our pizza idea, like. Yeah, I think so. We used to rehearse every day. We had initially we had a practice room in a pub called The Bay View, which was owned by Kyle's uncle. And that's where we got the name The View. And then we got chucked out of there because we never packed away our gear before. He had a christening on one Sunday and we were practicing late Saturday night and forgot. And left all our gear out, and then like the christening showed up, and I was like, all these guitars and everything, like, so when we showed up to practice on the Sunday night, all our stuff was in the car park, and that was the end of that.
Well, I read on Wikipedia it says you got kicked out of there because Kyle was riding a scooter on the bar, but that must have been a bit of a story.
That was in a media arms and legs type story. It was actually a micro scooter, do you know, like them ones with the little wheels. Like, we were just having a laugh one day. I think it was like, what was it? And before, by the time it got to the papers, it was like a Lambretta.
Yeah, I guess you won't rule it out with you guys.
No, it was quite typical at the time. Like, things were getting sort of blown out of proportion, but it was good practicing there. It was definitely, that was what was sort of where we'd done a lot of the sort of early work. Because we've done a few of our first gigs as well.
Okay, well, just get everyone in there type thing.
Yeah. And so we had to find another place. So we ended up playing and doing the same thing in a room up the stairs in the doghouse in the town. So that became our rehearsal room, and we used to just go there and practice every day because, like I already said, we'd all quit our jobs and stuff by this time. So
yeah. I actually came to one of your practice rooms with the Paddingtons. And that was 2007. I wonder where that was.
That was the Bay Horse.
Okay, right, cool.
Yeah. I remember that. And we went to practice in the Bay Horse because I went up with the guys and done All Right in the Morning.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favourite songs. And then we practiced in the Bay Horse, and then they were playing in the doghouse that night, I think it was the doghouse they were playing that night.
Might have been. Yeah, I just remember it being in Dundee. I can't remember where. Yeah. I thought it might have been Fat Sam's, but I don't know.
Maybe.
But it's good night, definitely, yeah. Is there a bit of a story about you going to watch them before you were in a band as well?
Oh, yeah, I used to travel around a lot to see the Paddingtons. Like, so did all my mates. Like, we were right in the Paddingtons. We used to go through Edinburgh, Glasgow, further afield to see them. But yeah, in Dundee, when we went to see them in Dundee, I climbed on top of the speakers and they had to stop the gig until I got down. They're one of my favourite bands, still are.
Yes, yeah. Still love listening to that first album, to be fair. You mentioned management. Like, how quickly was that involved?
Really quickly. So our manager ended up coming down to the very first gig in the doghouse. And he pretty much sort of put the feelers out then, and that was pretty much when the relationship started with Grant, who managed us all the way through the first album up until the second album. And he was a big part. Like, he was really keen. Like, he was like, he believed in the band a lot. Like, and he bought us a van he bought was like a Toyota van, and I think I was, I don't know, Peter Kyle or whatever. I was like, this guy's absolutely lost the plot, man. He just bet like 1500 quid on a van, like he's never going to see that money again. And he said someday soon, guys, we're going to get a phone for somebody in London, and we're going to get down there super quick. And pretty much about 2 weeks after that, James Endicott phoned and was like, get down to London for my club night. And he was like, told you. And we all jumped in the van and went down. But yeah, so from very, very early on, we had management.
Then yeah, like how surreal is it when is it number six you were on the call list or something? 2006? It must have been weird and great.
Yeah, that was pretty weird. That was pretty funny. Wasn't expecting that one. So it was pretty cool. Eh? And some cool companies like Carl and O was like next to me and Faris and the Horrors and stuff. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. And yeah, I think I read that you ended up playing Leeds and Reading quite last minute in 2006. What was the story behind that? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember who somebody pulled out, and we were just basically on like an endless tour. Like we're packed to go on tour for like a couple of weeks, but dates just kept getting added because we were pretty hot at the time. So like we're just saying, right, guys, we'll just do another week, and it ended up being like a really long tour. And that was in that run where someone pulled out Reading and Leeds, which was huge for us at the time. Still is now. But we went down and I remember it was a good gig. Like both of them were good gigs. Great festivals.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I was reading like the whole crowd is chanting kind of thing for The View Is On Fire and stuff. I think I must have been there that year, 2006, yeah, was you? And then, yeah, obviously, like another link with the Paddingtons is recording with Owen Morris, I think, which you did for both of your first albums.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a mad experience by all accounts.
Yeah, a good experience. Like looking in the background, I was like, yeah, mad. He's got methods to his madness. Like he's a great producer, but yeah, it was a crazy time, mate. But yeah, one of the best times of my life, really. Yeah. Proper rock and roll, that guy, like, lived it, like proper. I think he left the session about four times pretending he quit. I think one of the times he didn't even notice. And then he came back and he was like, okay, guys, I'm back. And we're like, we've got the shops or something. He's like,
was that in Scarborough, the first one?
Yeah, just in
Scarborough. And did that kind of suit your style at the time then, a bit chaotic, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a sort of farmhouse that had been rented, that all the gear, everything had been rented in. It was really cool place. The Future Heads had just done a record there before. I think that's what gave Owen the idea to do it there. But yeah, it worked out pretty cool.
Yeah. And at what point, did he have, might be skipping ahead here, but there was a tour called Heading for Russia or something. Where did you end up like, we were playing outside the country pretty quickly type thing?
Yeah, that Heading for Russia tour, that was quite later on, but.
Oh, okay, right.
That was like a sort of big European tour where sort of Moscow was like the sort of furthest away place that we were playing. That was a good tour. We'd done that tour with a band called the Velveteen Saints that are sadly no longer, but we shared the bus in that way. I mean, like, we're all like really good friends with them, like, still to this day, they're like top lads, so that was really good. What was the other?
Yeah, just like how quickly were you playing outside the country?
We done a gig in Derry in Ireland pretty early on. And then went back and supported the Undertones.
Oh, right.
A year later. So that was our first gigs that we'd done outside Scotland. The first gig we'd done down in London, well, England, any place in England, it was down in London at the Windmill in Brixton. That was James Endicott's club night. That was with Larrick and Love.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And great band. I can't remember when the first time was we went to Europe. I think it was maybe Amsterdam. But yeah, all quite quick. It was all quite quick, really, considering.
Mm. And like that amount of touring, is that something, obviously it's going to suit you when you're, well, you're still like 19, 20 at the time.
Yeah, a bit roughly, yeah. It was the first tour, I would have been 19, maybe 20. And Kyle would be a year younger, and then the rest of us are all the same age as me, so.
Right, right. But how long can you keep up that kind of intense, I guess, kind of partying type vibe on the tour? Like, is it easy to keep up? Like, what are the highs and lows type thing?
I don't know. We managed to keep it up fairly well, I think. But my advice would be definitely to have a couple of days off if you know and again, keep look after your mental health. But we weren't at the time. It was just like a whirlwind.
Yeah, I think Kyle said something like if he was giving advice to younger bands, it would be to get a manager that's going to look after you, to tell you when to eat and everything. I was like listening to the difference between the first and second albums. Obviously, the first one goes to number one, which must have been mental. Was there any standout differences going into that second album? Obviously, the same producer. Like, did you feel pressure or anything like that?
Yeah, there was a bit, obviously, trying to like follow up the number one album and stuff. And you've got the label sort of saying, we need songs, guys. These ones aren't hits and that. And they're like, well, you don't know. Like, I mean, whatever set out to write hits. You know? I mean, like, so it's like, and I suppose just the old adage that you've got your whole life to prepare for the first album and then like a year for the second. Definitely felt that. But
yeah, did you have songs? Were you writing songs for the second album that you didn't have like songs that were left over from the first or anything?
No, not really, no. Those songs on the first record was like all the songs that we had basically, but a couple that were pulled, and then we basically just partied for a while and then people were like, when you do the next album, we were like, oh hi.
Yeah.
It was different. It was more, there was more experimentation in the studio, let's say, on the second record. Whereas the first record, we were basically just, the songs were all written and had been gigged and toured, and we were just sort of trying to capture the live essence as much as possible. Whereas the second record was a lot more build it up in the studio and got to get strings and all that.
I was going to mention the strings part of it. How did that work?
That was pretty cool, actually. Owen had a guy across in New York, and he basically done them all, like played them all in separately, like on his, and sent them back over.
Ah, right, okay.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So I've got like Five Rebeccas is a great song.
Yeah.
Enjoying that. Like, you can tell like the difference in the sound between the first and second on that, I think. And Paul and Atini getting involved, is that someone you've had a good relationship with?
Yeah, Paul sound like great artist, great guy. He was working along the road in Rockfield, and we were in Mono Valley. We had two amazing studios that are only like really close to each other in Wales. So I think Kyle went along to his studio first and dragged them back along. Like, he came along basically his whole band. And then they recorded that covers. That was a cool night. That was a really cool night. Good vibe.
And did you have, like, in terms of Scotland, like, I feel like with, like, Scotland and Ireland, you know, people are rooting for each other a lot more. Did you have, like, a community of other bands that you'd get on well with type of thing?
Especially in Dundee, we had like there wasn't much. There's always a scene in Dundee. Like, there's always bands in Dundee, but when we were kicking off, there was sort of a scene sort of developed around sort of the Doghouse where we were always playing and stuff. And it was a good wee scene. Like, it was like bands like The Law, Love It Anna, a band called Dave ? band called The Get Downs, The Brogues. But yeah, it was cool. There was a lot of bands in Dundee around that time.
And then those kind of big moments are like signing the record deal and getting to number one? Like, what were, like you say, it was a bit of a whirlwind at the time. Was it hard to get your head around at the time, or were you just kind of just enjoying it?
Just kind of enjoying it, really. Yeah, just kind of taking it every day as it comes at that time, like you do when you're that young, do you know what I mean? You don't really worry about the future of that day. Just sort of. But yeah, I mean, going to number one, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Don't imagine.
And Kyle kind of mentioned the money. He was like, there must have been loads of money flying about, but you didn't really see any of it. Is that how you remember it?
Kind of, yeah. We just took a wage, and so we all just had the same wage and put all the money in the bank. So we were never sort of like, do you know what I mean? It wasn't like you'd done one gig and then it was like thousands or whatever. We just set it up that way. It was a manager's idea, Grant. But I think that's maybe one of the reasons how we managed to last sort of so long as well. Because it was like we'd sort of had a pot there to sort of get everything sorted kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, do you think that was the best way to go about it?
I had enough money in my pocket and was happy, like, just flying about the country playing shows, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yes. And then, yeah, was it just a story or somewhat behind America? Like, you played there at some point, but then you couldn't go back or something?
Yeah. Yeah, we'd done like a short tour there and it was looking really good, but like Same Jeans had like charted really well in college radio and stuff. And we had a North American tour book that sold out, but we had to pull it because Kyle got caught with drugs.
Right.
And it took was years to get back in.
Yeah, I was going to say, when did you eventually get back there to play?
Well, it was the tour just after we'd done the fourth album, so I'm not too good at remembering dates and stuff, but it was a good few years before we managed to get back in.
Right, okay.
Same with Japan. We'd done two sold-out tours of Japan. It was like our second biggest, I think it maybe even still is our second biggest territory outside Scotland or England and that. But, yeah. We're not like back there at the moment either. Still not.
Still. All right.
I think it took McCartney 40 years or something to get back in. So.
Yeah. Speaking of good segue, actually. Speaking of McCartney, the producer on the third album. He's in a band with Paul McCartney, is that right?
Yeah, The Fireman.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, Youth, yeah. He's in a band with McCartney, yeah.
Yeah, how did that come about then with him?
He also produced our new record.
Ah, okay, right, cool.
I think it was just the label chose him. The label thought he'd be a good fit.
Right.
I think they were trying to get a bit more sort of poppy sensibility out. It was maybe because he likes his synths and like sort of layering all the backing vocals and that. So, but yeah, it worked. I like that third record.
Yeah, I was enjoying it. Listening to like Grace. The video for Grace is good as well. It kind of like captures some of those early times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Underneath the Lights, I was enjoying that. But where was that recorded? Or did you count down a bit by that point or not really?
Yeah, that was definitely the most chilled album to that date. It was recorded in Putney in a studio called Brit Row, which used to be Pink Floyd's personal studio.
All right.
So it's cool. And yeah, it was a lot more chilled affair. It wasn't like just constant like drinking and partying while doing a bit of recording. Like we used to just we got in quite early and stuff. Like the first two records were basically always after like the first week we ended up getting into like a nocturnal pattern where we'd end up being like up all night making music and then sleeping all day. Whereas that one, it was sort of like strict in at 11 a.m. sort of thing. Well, I say strict, like some people show up about 1, but and then we would just sort of break for food and have a couple of beers and then go back and do work until 11 at night. And then it was sort of a bit of a strict curfew on when we'd finish kind of thing. And we had weekends off and stuff, so we'd never had that before. It was just sort of straight through. Yeah, so it was definitely a lot more chilled affair.
Yeah, yeah. And did you find like you were wanting to be a bit more, you wanted to change as a band anyway at that point, like kind of thing, in terms of the way you worked?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was mostly down to youth sort of, because that's the way he wanted to work, kind of thing. But yeah, I think it was definitely time to do that sort of more, have a more professional outlook at that point.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. And yeah, I've got to ask you about this Forward Russia story, if you do remember it. Because it's kind of like, first heard it from the guy from Forward Russia, Tom, and then the Got Cars viewpoint. But from what I remember, something like you guys thought they were being a bit weird about sharing a dressing room. Then your kind of entourage managed to get hold of a load of vegetables and started lobbing them at them, wasn't it?
Nah, there was no vegetables thrown that night as far as I could remember. Like, now, they were being a bit arsey about sharing the dressing room. It was, and we took the hump at that. So what I remember is while they were on, me and Kyle went and done an acoustic gig in the toilets. The crowd was. And yeah, that's what I remember. No vegetables.
Yeah, I don't know where I spoiled that one from. It's quite funny.
Not to my knowledge, anyway.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 22 Gram Pod. If Naughty's guitar music is your thing, then you might enjoy our Patreon page, where for £3 a month you will get access to the following series. The Naughty's Deep Dive, where we go through the likes of the Stalking Pete Doherty documentary in painful detail. My favourite 2000s album, where patrons and other guests come on to talk about their favourite album of the era. Legend or Landfill, in which we go through Enemy's top 10 albums of each year from 2001 and see if we think they are indeed legendary or for the landfill. Unsigned Stories, where we chat to bands that didn't quite make it in terms of signing that elusive record deal. We also have Fan Stories, where I talk to people about their memories and opinions on all things Naughty's Indie. You also get early access to any main podcast episodes, and it's also worth checking out the YouTube page, where you can see extended video versions of the interviews, as well as plenty of other bits of commentary and opinion. All links are in the description. Now back to the pod. And then, yeah, you quite quickly got another album out after the third album, like two albums in 2 years. Yeah. And a switch of labels, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, after the third record, we got dropped from Columbia. Pretty much instantly signed to Cook and Vinyl, which is a good label. I like Columbia as well. But yeah, so the fourth one was on, the first one on Cook and Vinyl. We're still with Cook and Vinyl now. We also changed managements. We've changed managements every album, which I was
bad
a little bit. But yeah, that was a good record. Working with Mike Crossey, who's an absolute amazing producer. Again, that was a bit more, every album has been a bit less crazy than the first two, but the sort of the same kind of thing, sort of working during the day, go for food, come back. Then that was in the Moore Museum in Liverpool. It used to be called the Big Pink. A lot of people in Liverpool still call it that, but it's been changed to the Moore Museum. And that's a great studio as well. Okay. I really enjoyed that record. I really enjoyed working with Mike Crossey. He's a cool dude, like.
Yeah, he'd worked with Arctic Monkeys on their demos or something, I read.
Yeah, I think he worked on Favourite Worst. Yeah, I think he'd done the demos, and then he co-produced on Favourite Worst Nightmare, I think. But I
yeah, know, yeah.
I mean, don't quote me on that, but he'd done Jake Bugg's first record. He's worked with 1975 a lot.
And, yeah, did I read that... Was it Drew from Baby Shambles that introduced you to Albert Hammond? Is that right?
Yeah. I think Albert was saying that he was looking for a band to produce, and Drew was kind of like, the viewer way to do a record kind of thing, they might be quite good. That's how that came about.
Okay.
And then Albert came across to meet us in London. And I was like, it's cool. I mean, like, the Strokes are like massive to us, like, as are everybody else. But
yeah. Was it him and was it Gus Oberg? He produced the Strokes' third album. Is that right?
Yeah, Yeah, yeah. He's a great guy as well, he's Gus. Caught up with him at Transmit last year, actually. Was it last year or the year before? I think it was last year. So it was good to see them again. But I guess he's worked on some mega records. So like,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, what was their like kind of working style like? Was it similar? At Albert, was he going sober at that point or something?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, yeah, it was quite a... We had a few sort of party nights and that night. We were all living in the flat underneath the studio. And we had catering, which was nice. So we never went out all the time. It was kind of... That was in Hamburg in a studio. It was kind of out in the outskirts of Hamburg kind of thing. And so it was all kind of quite contained within the sort of one building. Again, another amazing studio. It had the desk that John Lennon recorded Double Fantasy on. One of his records, anyway. And it's pretty cool. It's a really good place to work as well.
Yeah, I guess when you hear Hamburg, you're thinking Reeperbahn, but I've heard it's a nice place other than that.
yeah, it's a cool place, Hamburg.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing Carl was saying, like I was saying how it was, you know, impressive how many albums you managed to get out in that time when, you know, a lot of bands maybe found it more difficult. But he was saying that you were quite prolific in terms of songwriting. Were you always kind of on the go with that?
Yeah, we both write quite a lot of songs, like. But I always thought that we sort of wasted a lot of time. But then looking back on it, everybody's like, "Oh, he's managed to do so much in such a short time." But I always thought, like, at the time, like after the sort of second, third record, I sort of thought we took the foot off the gas, kind of thing. But apparently not.
No, on paper, like it looks like yeah. You hammered them out, basically, I guess. And yeah, like, what was why was there a gap after the last album? Then what happened there? Just a bit of a break.
Yeah, that was the hiatus time. I kind of wanted to do solo stuff. Was sort of the catalyst for the hiatus, really. But looking back on it, I think it done was a bit of good because we'd saturated our own sort of market a fair bit, like, you know what I mean? Like we gigged constantly sort of the year after we'd done the fifth records. And I think it was good to sort of just have a wee break and take stock and all that.
Yeah. Were you doing, I read you were doing a solo thing called Web, was it?
Aye. Still doing it. We've put it on ice just because I'm no multitasker, eh? So the view was coming back, so I just had to sort of be writing for that and sort of focusing on that. But yeah, hopefully we've got a record there, so hopefully we'll get it recorded soon. I'm going to start rehearsing with the guys, Andy and Gav, again soon. But aye, we've got enough songs there for a record, and it'd be good to get out because we were planning on doing a UK tour. And we brought out one single, had a UK tour booked, and that was like brought out the single the week before the first COVID lockdown, and the tour was supposed to be the week after the first COVID lockdown.
Right, okay.
And that kind of obviously put a spanner in the works. So, and then from there, we've done a few gigs last year, but it kind of, we're trying to get the ball back rolling now, but I had to do the view stuff. And then get that done first. So, but I'm looking forward to getting back in the studio with those guys.
Yeah, what's the setup there? Like, how is it, say, 3 years?
Yeah. Okay. Just me and Andy and Gav, who are the McGonagall brothers, you know, two brothers. Guys, they're great human beings, like, love them a bit. And yeah, just mates. We've been mates for years, and then I started jamming together, and it worked good, like, yeah.
Okay,
like, cool. So it's cool. We tried to do a sort of self-release single thing. We got offered a couple of deals, and I was kind of like always had it in my head that I'd like to do a sort of self-release punk sort of vinyl record type vibes. But oh, never again, man. It's too stressful. I wish I'd just let someone else take care of that. But hopefully we get something sorted out, and when we can, we'll get it released and stuff. Right?
Yeah, I've had a few people that have said. When they've decided to like release around stuff, it just becomes Yeah, a bit mad, just having to do everything for it.
Oh, it's mad. I never knew how it was. Like, what? This code, that code. You've got to like register this and that. And I was like, oh no. I just thought you just sent it away, got the records and tried to sell them. But I had to get all these codes in there, and it was a nightmare. I never registered it for radio either. And I had like DJs up here, like Jim Gillette, phoning and saying, like, here, I'm trying to play your record on the radio, but I'm not allowed because you've not filled out this form. Go and fill it out so I can play it. And I'm like, oh, sorry, two seconds. And he's like giving me it and that. I was just like, I'm no a good businessman. Like, that's what I found out with that experiment. But I do love the band, and I hopefully get this thing, I hopefully get the album out at some point, because it kind of feels like, well, we're on a sort of quite a good trajectory. We've supported the Libs
at a big okay.
stuff. So Pete to the rescue again, I sort of does it with that was the biggest gig to date. And that was kind of the highlight, and then lockdown happened. And look, I'm complaining. I mean, I was a lot of people had a lot worse lockdowns and just getting a few gigs cancelled. But it took the sting out of him. So we'll get back on it, definitely.
Cool, yeah, look forward to hearing that. And then you mentioned kind of like different recording and stuff. Like, how has writing songs and recording changed over the years? Do you still just write as you used to, or has it changed a little bit?
I've changed up a fair bit, really. Like, I used to just be acoustic guitar, notebook, and like a tiny little tape recorder or a little four track or whatever. Whereas I'm a bit of a gearhead nowadays, so I've got like a home studio and like Ableton and keyboards and all that kind of stuff. So I do quite a lot of writing on keyboards and all that kind of stuff. Whereas I used to just sort of do rough, very rough, like just quick recordings and that. Whereas now I sort of use a bit of technology, sort of get a wee drum beat on the go, play along with that and all that kind of stuff. It's amazing what you could do with a computer now. But at the same time, I have been thinking I might just have to go back to just acoustic and a little recorder. I've done that for a while.
Yeah.
Apart from the actual equipment, the sort of process is just the same, really. Just sort of walk around and hope that a lyric pops in your head and write it down and then embellish from there, kind of thing, yeah.
And have you ever thought about like producing other bands? Has that ever been something you've been keen on?
I have. I've produced other bands. I produced a band called Vida from Alloa. I done a couple of singles with them. I worked with a band called Bad Hombres. I done an EP for them, a couple of singles. And at the moment, I'm working on my mate Mark Jordson's record, just the one track on it. That's what I was doing earlier on today. During the hiatus, I went and done a degree in audio production because it's something that I've always been interested in. So I went and done that. So it's pretty cool. So, yeah, very much so, yeah. I'd like to have one studio. I'm just not quite there yet. But, yeah.
That's it, yeah. How long did that take? About a year or something, the course?
It was a two-year degree, so it was like an American vibe. Like, it was trimesters and all that. So it's like 2 year degree, so you only got 2 weeks off in the summer and 2 weeks off in the Christmas, and then the rest of the time you were in uni. It was a bit of a pity that, again, COVID, like, so, because the uni that I was in, SEE's got like really good facilities and all that, but because of COVID, like, we weren't allowed to go in too much, so a lot of it was just online. It was good. It's probably one of my favorite experiences, like, what I've done, like, yeah. Like, to I left school when I was 16, and it's like started as a joiner's labourer, like the Monday after I left on the Friday. And then to go back and do a degree course when I was like 34, 35 or whatever it was quite mad. But it was definitely worth it. Like, I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Mm. Yeah, I guess that's the best way to do it, isn't it? Like, you go to uni when you actually know what you want to do.
I'd always fancied uni. Like, I used to live just around the corner from the one in Dundee, and I thought, this looks the bollocks, man. I used to like see everybody just chilling out, drinking on the grass and stuff. This looks class. Always quite fancied it. Never ever thought I would actually make it back, but then there you go. You never know what's in the corner, eh?
No, yeah, exactly, yeah. And, yeah, in terms of the view, like, I saw you on Soccer M and stuff. What's Alan McGee's involvement? Is he a manager?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the manager, which is cool. I mean, it's, I'd actually just turned like all my CD collection into like put them all onto a hard drive before I moved house not long ago. And it's like, I was looking through it and I was like, about 95% of this CD collection is like McGee related somehow, like, hey, just like, you know what I mean, for Oasis to the Planet Ends to the Hives, like to, I don't know, all the other cast we were watching now. It was like, it's mega. So that was pretty cool. That came about, I emailed him. I had his email because we were supposed to be doing one of his charity gigs a few years back, but it ended up not happening. But I always had his email and we didn't have management. And I knew that we were starting to think about getting back together. So I emailed him and he was like, yeah, he just like phoned me back the same, like about 10 minutes later, and was like, I'm up for that. Like, I'll meet you in Liverpool. So we went down and met him in Liverpool. And yeah, he's a manager. Along with Jamie.
Okay. Did you have like an existing relationship with Alan McGee anyway? Or not really?
No. Met him a couple of times, but not really, you know. Always sort of wanted to work with him, though, just purely because he's worked with like so many, like my favourite bands kind of thing. Like,
you know. Yeah. And then, yeah, what was kind of the catalyst for getting back together? Like, was it always going to happen? Did you know it was going to happen at some point?
Yeah, it was always the plan at some point to get back together. And then so the email started flying about sort of like when I was at my last sort of just going the last bit of uni, and I was just like, I'm up for it, but I'll just need to finish this off first to kind of like be in the View and like be on the tour bus doing essays and shit. Like, so we're going to have to wait until I'm finished. So we waited until I was finished my uni, and then we basically just started sort of sending them demos to each other and that kind of stuff. And then we went over to Spain to Youth Studio. He's got a studio in Spain, and really nice studio in Spain, and recorded it there.
Oh, yes. So how does that work? Then you say you're on Cooking Van, are they kind of fund that recording kind of thing?
You just give you an advance to go and make the records and some money for pro. And I'm not really too sure, to be honest, mate. I'm not like business-minded at all, but I know they gave us a decent advance to go and make it, and they give you money for public, for publicity, what's it called? Marketing and that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, like the social, paying the social media guys and that kind of stuff. Yeah, they're a cool label for Cooking Vinyl. I like them. I like them a lot. We've got some cool acts, though.
Yeah, I think I've spoke to a few people that have been on there. I think Subway's on there at some point. I might still be or something. Yeah.
The Makers.
Okay, right.
Yeah,
do you have a good relationship with people? I think I saw you're involved in some kind of super group with them at some point, with Reverend and the Makers, and I think Drew was in there as well.
I love the Reverend. I bumped into loads, John. Just sort of around festivals, and I think there was a night, and when we were all like jumping up on the stage at one point. I can't remember exactly when that was. There's been some messy nights when certain people are together, right? But definitely. Yeah. I remember he married me and my missus at the 30 year anniversary of the Victoria Park Clash gig and stuff. Just like, it's a laugh, obviously. He's good banter, like.
Yeah, I've been like following him on Twitter recently. He's he really goes for it. He's been doing loads of like playing at people's houses and stuff on it. Have you seen it?
Yeah, he's good on Twitter.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun, to be fair.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Did he ask? He's asking people to get involved with that, wasn't he? Letter to myself or something.
That, yeah, former 21-year-old self.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting idea.
Yeah,
Then I was listening to your song Shoveling His Hands, which I was enjoying. Is that something that came back recently? Was it one of those songs that's been like around for the last few years?
I'm trying to think when I wrote that. I wrote all the tunes for the new record I wrote fairly recently once I'd finished uni. So it couldn't be tools. But it was one of the first ones. Some did a lot different on the demo. It got slowed down a lot in the studio and that, which I wasn't too happy about at first, to be honest, but I got vetoed. But I'm starting to grow. It's starting to grow on me a bit now. It's got a cool corally vibe, and I like the corally. So.
No, I was enjoying it, yeah. Is it coming out next month?
The record?
The album, yeah.
I think so, yeah. It's been moved around a couple of times.
Okay.
But I can't remember the date like off the top of my head. But like I said, I'm rubbish at stuff. We were in the group chat, like, guys, get this on the socials.
And I'll just like ask you some of the questions I sent you. Has there been a high point? I guess there's been quite a lot of high points for you guys, hasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the whole Baby Shambles thing that we talked about earlier, from start to finish, like when we first met them to the end of the first tour type thing, to on still ongoing, is like a highlight. The album going to number one, that was a highlight. But one that always stands out is the first appearance at Tea Park was like mega. Just couldn't believe it. Like, we were playing on the tea break stage. It was like the unsigned stage. And people couldn't get in the tent. It was just like absolutely mobbed. And like everybody absolutely went for it. Just when we were being like, we were like the most local band there kind of thing. And I always just remember thinking, that's amazing. Like, that's like our Glastonbury. Like, so it's like that's like what you dream about, like being Dundee. You know, it was like 20 minutes up the road. That was a big highlight. But yeah. There's been a lot. Working with Owen Morris, it makes huge Oasis fans, so to be. Loads.
Yeah. I was reading, I think, the person who runs Team the Park, who's like, do you can play every year for me or something. Is that stopped now?
Yeah. Yeah, the closest thing now is Transmit.
Yeah. I love watching the live videos from there. They're always absolutely mad.
Yeah. That's the next gig that we've got, Transmit.
Ah, excellent.
It's good. There's no campsite on the hand, which was sort of one of the sort of legendary parts of Team the Park, but it's a good festival. It's just around the corner from my house. So.
Ah, nice. What are the best festivals to play abroad? I suppose there's loads these days, isn't there?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've been over, but I mean, we call it Benicassim, but what is it really called? Is it? I can't even remember the real name of it, but one that's in Benicassim, that's great.
Yeah.
BBK, is it? Pupil Pop in Belgium, that was always one that I loved to go to. It's quite a sort of, always kind of had a sort of heavier rock kind of feel to it. Like, I've seen like the Stooges and that there and stuff, and I really like playing that one. The Fezzies in Europe are a lot more like chilled out, and like there's no sort of as many people like rushing you about health and safety this, health and safety that, and that kind of stuff. They're always like, hey man, enjoy yourself, it's cool. And the backstages are always amazing, so you quite often get a pool in them and that. And another one that we always like to play is Lowlands in just outside Amsterdam.
I have heard of that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I remember we went, a few of us went to Benicassim in 2009, and it was like a massive, well, it was like a hurricane type thing, and all the stages got closed, but me and my mates managed to make the most of it and got backstage, and there was a pool and everything and free drinks. Bit of an insight into what you guys must have gone through.
we were there that year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Oasis played.
Yeah, it's Ace. Yeah. That was one of the last ever gigs, I suppose. Did you have a good, I've heard a few stories about you and them. Did you have a good relationship with those guys?
Yeah, they've always been really nice to us. Like, I and just, they're both quite vocal at the beginning, like sort of, like Big was up on the radio and in the NME and stuff, which was pure mega at the time, like, yeah, what's the list? Good guys.
Yeah, I saw a story about him. Did Noel Gallagher walk into one of your recording sessions once or something?
Yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah, the very first time. Well, do you see, Remember I told you that we had an EP that was like the first ever record that we made properly. We made it in Scotland, a studio called The Teapot. But we went to Metropolis in London to master it, which was one of our first trips down there. And Noel Gallagher was just in the cafe when we got there. And we were like, what? So we just like ran across to him. I was like, no, how's it going? Come and listen to our album. Come and listen to our EP. And he was like, all right. And they just came inside and listened to it. And he was just like, we were like, what the hell's going on, man? And he was like, ah, cool stuff, guys. I keep catches in a bit. And then ever since then, every time you see him, he's always like, all right, guys, how's it going? Good thing.
That's it, yes, yeah. And yeah, just want to finish on then. Well, maybe a couple, but is there anything you do differently?
I don't know. It's a hard one, that, isn't it? Because you never know what games are on if you do it different. One thing I do regret is missing out on all the fancy hotel breakfasts that I never made it down for because it was too much. That's something I think about. Like, oh, God, them fancy breakfasts.
It's a good shout, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe at least there's some in the past, but I try to just focus on the now, again.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, I was going to ask as well, like, say if the view was starting out these days, like, how do you think it would be different for you guys? Like, what challenges do you think you'd have?
I don't know. I suppose, like, the whole sort of rock and roll debauchery things like sort of frowned upon a bit more nowadays, isn't it? Whereas at the time we were sort of praised for it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. The fact that like you've basically, which I think is quite unfair on young bands, like, you've got to basically be good on social media before anybody will pick you up. Like we were like never very good on social media, that like it was sort of always went over our heads type thing, and like so like yeah, that might have been a sort of problem for us.
Yeah, it's like must be
a shame.
Yeah, it must be a distraction a bit, like having to do all that.
Yeah, and a lot of like you know people I found like good artists that they're quite introverted. Do you know what I mean? And that's like why the management and the label like sort of markets them and they do the music type thing. Eh? Whereas if you've got them, do it both. I think some good artists will fall through the cracks just because they're not very good on Instagram or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's also nice to have a bit of mystery about a band as well without having to like post everything you're doing, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree. It's like Oasis, they were like that, weren't they? It was like, who are these guys? Like, what do they do? Whereas now it's like, you know what every band's had for their breakfast and what their fan they're driving in and where they're going.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? You're playing, how many gigs are you doing over summer? Quite a lot.
We've got a few in. Hey, the next time we're down south is for Shine On Festival, I think. Are you got that?
Okay. Don't know where that is.
No, I'm not sure. I've got a few. We've got an English tour in November as well.
Ah, okay, a nice one.
It's quite a few dates, so maybe catch us at one of them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, mate. Sounds good. Junkie.